Okay, today we're going to talk about, I'm skipping a whole bunch of sugyas because I realize we only have like 2 shiurim left in the whole summer, so I don't know, you'll have to do mitzvah srichas kavana. I was looking at my packet on mitzvah srichas kavana, and it's like 75 sources, so it's like not shaykh for us to go through mitzvah srichas kavana in a half hour, but most of these sugyas are not really shaykh in a half hour, but we're doing our best. So I want to skip ahead to the, since most of what we've been discussing has been tefillah, Kriya Shema Tefillah related, so I want to discuss the din of, or the inyan of Kavana B'Tefillah. Now the inyan of Kavana B'Tefillah can be divided, I believe, into two separate topics. One is what we do in advance of Tefillah in order to promote Kavana, and the other is what we do during Tefillah in order to promote Kavana, or what Kavana actually means during the Tefillah. So there are as many halachos about the first as there are about the second. I mean, so much, and that's, a good lesson for life in general. So much of what we try to accomplish is going to be determined by the preparation we put into it. Meaning, whether you're going to be, let's say, a good doctor is more determined, probably, or at least as much determined, as by whether you go to medical school than how hard you work once you are a doctor. Meaning, it's not enough to just show up to a hospital and say, I'm ready to cure. It doesn't help. You have to first get training. You have to first do the proper preparation. So the same is true with anything else, and particularly when it comes to Kavana B'Tefillah. And Chazal recognized this, and therefore they set up a whole bunch of rules, a whole bunch of halachas. The Gemara Maseches Brachos on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Mishnah Maseches Brachos, rather, on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Ein Omdin L'Espalel El Mitoch Kovid Rosh. Person has to make sure he's in the right frame of mind before tefillah, that has to be a sense of kovid rosh, a sense of seriousness when he's about to daven. The Gemara says we learn this like we learn many things from tefillah schana in the first parak of Shmuel Aleph, that it describes that he maras nefesh. So the Gemara says that you see that that's what promoted this tefillah, that she was in a state of mind of a very serious issue where she was deeply concerned, and that's what it takes in order to daven properly. At the very least, the Shulchan Aruch Pasen Siman Tzadik Gimel Sif Beis lo yamud l'spalel ella be'im of achna'a lo mitoch schok v'kalos rosh v'dvarm b'telim v'lo mitoch kas. It should not be from a sense of schok and kalos rosh. A person should not be in a joking, lighthearted mood. That's not the mood of tefillah. If one is in a joking and lighthearted mood, one needs to make adjustments to their mood prior to davening. I remember when I was a kid in Camp Misora, when I was the summer after, I guess, 9th grade and the summer after 10th grade, my head counselor was a guy by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky. And he would tell us after night activity, which was always, the teen night activity was always a co-ed night activity, and it sometimes might have bordered on schok the kalos rosh, and we would always daven marv right afterwards. He would make us sit silently for like 3 minutes before marv, because it just wasn't right to go straight from that to that, to go straight from schok the kalos rosh into tefillah. A person has to develop a sense of kovid rosh. This is the halacha. Not that you're dafka supposed to have schok v'kalos rosh before the 3 minutes, but that if one is in a state of schok v'kalos rosh, that they shouldn't daven in that state. It should be aim of a hachna. Two things that the Shulchan Aruch points out: a sense of dread or fear or awe, and also hachna, a tremendous sense of humility, and even the posture that we assume during tefillah takes on the posture of someone who's standing humbly in front of the Ribbono Shel. So that's one thing we do in order to set the proper mood, is make sure that we're in the proper mood. Second thing, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Siman Sadi Gimel, Sif Aleph, Yishe Sha'a Achas Kodem Sheyakum L'Spalel K'dei Sheyichavim Liva L'Makom. A person should wait a Sha'a Achas before he davens in order to have proper kavana. Also, Shah Achas after he davens, so that it shouldn't look like he's, you know, trying to get out of there as quickly as possible. But the Shah Achas before you daven is in order to get your mind right. So a person has to not just check his mood, but has to actually give it some time. He needs that Shah Achas. Now, the poskim struggle with this a little bit, because what do the words Shah Achas mean? Right?
What is it could mean a million things, right? It could, like an hour, it could mean, I remember, 3 days.
Right, Shah Achas could mean an hour, could mean days, could mean a moment. So it's not so clear what Shah Achas is. Meaning, did they really wait a Shah Achas before they daven, the Shah Achas after they daven, and daven 3 times a day? If it means an hour, let's assume they davened at a matzah minyan, and the davening itself only took 18 minutes. But still, that's a heck of a lot of time to dedicate to tefillah. When did they learn? When did they work? When did, hard to imagine that Shah Achas means an hour in this context. It's also not clear before which part of davening this Shah Achas is necessary. Meaning, the Aruch HaShulchan, Siman Tzadik Gimel Sif Dalet, says that Ein HaKavan Al Tefillah Shemona Esrei. We don't mean Shah Achas before Shemona Esrei. Sharei Shoen Harbe Ad Shemona Esrei Pesuk Zimur B'Kriyas Shemona B'Chusel. Because anyway, we have built into the Seder of Tefillah a lot of time before Shemona Esrei, all the time that it takes to say Pesuk Zimur B'Chus Kriyas Shemona and everything else. Ela Hakavana Al Kol Seder At Tefillah. The Shah Achas means before you begin anything to sit B'Shtik of His Bonus Belave. To just think about that you're about to dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it means. Prima Gadim disagrees. Prima Gadim says, yeah, this Shah Achas was assuming that they go straight into Shemona Esrei. We have Pesukei Dezimra. Good. And then Birch Kriyashma and Kriyashma. So we have our Shah Achas anyway. And therefore, says the Prim Gadim, even if you're going to assume Shah Achas means more than a second, more than a couple of seconds, all we really need before davening is a couple of seconds, because we have built into the davening all of this time. And Kodem Shispal clearly means before Shemona Esrei. The Mishnah Berurah writes that Shah Achas ideally should be an hour, but minimally, the amount of time it takes to walk 8 tefachim. How long does it take to walk 8 tefachim? Like a second, no? K'dehilu ches tfachim. Very strange, right? Ideally an hour, minimally a second, you know, or whatever, 2 seconds maybe. Very, very odd. He says the chasidim, you know, it's for chasidim, it's to wait an hour, and that seems to be supported by the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Tefillin, Sias Kepayim, Parak Dalet, Halachat HaZayin, lefichach tzarech leishev ma'at kodem atfila k'dei lechave in eslibo. You should have it nicely, not like you're trying to rush. Therefore, but then the Ram says, Chasidim, are you showing what you're showing? Shah Achas Kodem Tefillah. So after the Ram says the din of waiting a little bit before tefillah, he then says, "V'chasidim rishonim did a shah achas," which means that the Rambam understands shah achas to mean now, and waiting just a little bit of time is for everybody else. But chasidim should really wait an hour before davening. Obviously, when we use the term chasidim, we don't mean it like it's colloquially used. We mean the way rishonim would use chasidim. The Aruch Shulchan says Shah Achas means a few moments. Now, the Rav Sternbach quotes from Chaim and from the Prima Gadim in Eshel Avram that this waiting should be done while sitting down. The Aliyah Rabbah disagrees, says it could even be done while standing. Meaning wherever a person is going to be able to not be distracted and focused would seem to be what it's about. Now, the conversation that keeps on coming up whenever we talk about any maila to have in tefillah is, what do you do if you can even do this, or come on, what do we have every single day? Your options are, you can either wait your Shah Achas or daven b'tzibur, but you can't do both, right? Does minyan beat the Shah Achas? So the Mishnah Berurah deals with this explicitly, and he says that you should not sacrifice tefillah b'tzibur for a Shah Achas. That tefillah b'tzibur on the hierarchy of milos to your tefillah, of improvements to your tefillah, enhancements to the tefillah, tefillah b'tzibur is a much greater enhancement than being Shoah Shah Achas. Good, so that's one area of getting ready for tefillah, is setting the proper mood for tefillah, no anger, no joking, no lightheadedness, waiting a Shah Achas. Second way of preparing for tefillah properly, preparing for kavana b'tefillah, Prima Gadim and Eshel Avram, Sadi Gimel, Beis, writes that a person should have a sitter for tefillah. Mishnah Brura says for Chazaras Hashatz as well, that it's best for a person to daven out of a siddur. In the Sefer Isha Yisrael, on Tefillah, Perikid Aleph, footnote Zayin, he writes, Ayin Chavetz Chaim B'Sof Sifro Shem Olam B'Hashmatos, that the Chavetz Chaim and the Hashmatos at the end of the Sefer Shem Olam writes, the Rishon called Sarach Sheyispal Mitoch Siddur, V'Al Kol Panam B'Tefillah Shmona Esrei, that it's so important to daven from a siddur, that davening from a siddur helps a great deal in a person's concentration. I think if you ask different people about this, they'll tell you different things. Some people find that it's easier davening from a siddur. Others find that it's easier not davening from a siddur. Easier closing their eyes. The Mishnah Brura writes, Osan amagbiim rasheim veineim lemalak mabitim alagag hamalachim malegim aleihem. A lot of times it's daven looking up. So the Mishnah Brura says the malachim are laughing at you and mocking you, if that's the posture you assume during tefillah. And the Mishnah Brura quotes from Prima Gadim, a person's not supposed to act wild in his shaking and shuckling during tefillah, especially not betzibur. I certainly shouldn't be loud. And the Achronim write that Kol mi she'eino otzeim einov b'shas tefillah shmoneh esrei eino zoch liros pnei shechina, the Mishnah Brura writes. So a little bit different than what the Chafetz Chaim writes in his Shem Olam. No, in Shem Olam he says you should always be davening from a siddur. In Mishnah Brura, same author, Chafetz Chaim says you have to be closing your eyes, and if you're not closing your eyes, oh, forget it. Then your tefillah is, you know, garbage. So what's pshat? So pshat is, it probably depends on the person. Meaning, you should, what's objectively wrong is to be looking up at the ceiling, looking out the windows, looking, you know, that's objectively wrong. But as far as what's better, closing your eyes or looking straight into the siddur, that would depend on kavana. A third thing to do in order to prepare oneself for tefillah, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Sadiches says to get rid of other thoughts. Get rid of any other thoughts that are in your head at any time. A fourth thing the Shulchan Aruch writes in Sif Hei in Siman Sadiches, Al Yachshov, don't feel entitled. A person should not feel that God owes him anything when he's davening. Ki adraba ze mazkir avonos of shaladam. If you go in with the attitude that God owes me something, God says, "Oh yeah, let me check. Let's go analyze how you've behaved, and do I really owe you anything?" So that's a fourth thing to be cognizant of. A fifth element, and this will be the final element, is how does one position one's body for tefillah? So within this fifth element, there are three things to consider. First of all, Shulchan Aruch Pasen Siman Sadihei, how to place one's hands. Tzaruch sheyachuf rosho ma'at, your head goes, how to position your head and hands. Your head should be slightly bent, so that your eyes are down to the ground. And then he says in Siv Gimel, Maniach yado alibo kfusin, hayamanis ala smolis. Your hand over your heart, with your right hand over your left hand. Va'omed ke'eved lufnei rabo be'ema b'yiru b'pacha. I don't know what, you know, sometimes people have a condition where their heart's on the wrong side. You know, they discuss by tillin, should you put on tillin on the other hand? I don't think you have to, like, move your hands over during tefillah. I think the point is just to assume the posture of humility. The Aruch HaShulchan is not so convinced that that's so critical. The Aruch HaShulchan says, sometimes that will look more like tsar than anivus, and that's not the impression you want to give. And he says, whatever works for you. The Yesha Kasha Aleim L'Spalel Bofen, says the Aruch HaShulchan, says, Ela Menichem Yadayim Al Ashtender, O El Hadaf Hadavik Kosel, Vein Klal Kavua B'Zeh. Some people put their hand on the wall when they're davening, put their hands on the shtender when they're davening. Okay, Kol Echad Yasek V'Yimah Shemutav Lol L'Spalel Bofen Zeh, V'Lo Yisrael Bati Yadayim. But don't daven wearing gloves, he says. Okay, so don't wear gloves, fine. Henshech, it says in the Aruch HaShulchan, it's gloves, I assume. Sounds right, hand. I assume so. Okay. What else? What else in terms of posture? Shulchan Aruch writes in two places, Sif Aleph and Sif Dalid, to be mechavin raglav, to hold your feet together. Yechavin raglav ze itzel ze bikivun, as if they are one foot. And the reason for that is Lidamos Lamalachim, because the Paskin Yecheskel, in the first part of Yecheskel, by the Masa Merkava, describes Ragleim Regel Yeshara, that their legs were a regel yeshara, that looked like one regel, one straight leg. So we try to mimic the malachim, so we stand with our feet together. Now it's interesting, the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Resh Yud Sif Katan Hey writes that and where's Tav Resh Yud? Tav Resh Yud is Hilchas Yom HaKippurim, where it talks about the minig to wear a kittel on Yom Kippur. Why do we wear a kittel on Yom Kippur? We want to appear like malachim, right? Says the Magen Avraham, what about women? You ever wonder, why don't women wear a kittel? Are they not supposed to appear like malachim on Yom Kippur? Why should there be a difference?
Already like a higher madriga.
That's a very politically correct answer.
that's people good. Like to say,
right, right. No, people. It's true. People do like to say they're already malachim. My wife is already a malach. I don't know about everybody else. No, but the Magen Avraham says, Ulufiza ein hanashim lov shem levenim de ein yucholim lios kemalachim. They're not able to be like malachim. Yeah. Umikalmakam akitul yucholim libel sheichne liban. If they want to wear a kittel, they can, because it will help humble them. Because kittel serves a second purpose that reminds us of Yom HaMisa, so it humbles a person. So if you hold of this concept that women are unable to mimic malachim, so now where am I going with this? Do women have to stand with their feet together during tefillah? It would seem not, if that's the only reason to hold your feet together. And that's what Shulchan Aruch says the reason is. However, in the Beis Yosef, in Siman Tzadi Hei, he gives another reason to hold the feet together. Because when one's feet are apart from each other, that is the ready-to-go running position, right? If you're standing like this, it means you're ready to run in an instant. When your feet are together, it's the worst way to start a race. Imagine people lining up to start the 100-yard dash or whatever, 100-meter, I don't know what it is, yard, meter, whatever it is. And maybe Usain Bolt needs a new challenge, so he would stand like that. That's not a way to start a race. You start with your feet apart from each other. So says the Beis Yosef, it's a way of showing that you're not rushing to get anywhere. That's why you hold your feet together during Shemona Esrei. So if that's the case, l'chor, that would apply to women as well. I think the minig is that women do hold their feet together as well. A third element of posture during tefillah is, and we still haven't gotten to the actual kavana of tefillah itself, is shuckling. What's the reason for shuckling, for moving one's body, for shaking during tefillah? So I was able to find four different possibilities. The Balaturim writes in Shemos Perichav, Pasuk Tesvav, that since the Torah was given, the Eima, the Yira, Bereta, Subazia, that it was given, people always say Zaya, it wasn't given with sweat, it was given with Zia, with trembling. It was given with trembling. So the trembling means that a person's shaking a little bit. So we should, the experience of encountering the Shekhinah inspires trembling in a person. So we start to tremble when we encounter the Shekhinah. Second possibility, the Zohar in Parshas Pinchas, quoted in the Kaf Chaim, Simen Mem Ches Siftes, says that since our neshamos are coming out most strongly when we daven, and Kiner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the neshama is like a ner tends to flicker. So we want to assume the posture of a ner. So we're sort of flickering like a candle. So we should realize that this is the opportunity for our neshama to shine. Of course, my favorite answer of all time is in the Kuzari, Maimer Sheni Osayutas. Anyone familiar with the Kuzari's answer? So that they used to... No, so he said that this, it's like a funny answer. He said that people shuckle when they learn, he said. When they daven, they used to not have so many sidurim or sfarim. So like five or six talmidim would have to share one. So they'd put it out like on the low table, and one guy would bend down to read, and then he'd get up and chazen, and then the next guy would bend down to read, and he'd get up and chazen. So they each had to take chances of being there, so they don't bang heads against each other when that's how they would learn. So mela, this became the minhag that you go down and back up. It's a little funny. I'm not sure. the Siddur Yavitz suggests a fifth possibility. He writes that minug pashut be mekedem shekol minhagam Torah below ira alav. You should realize every minhag has a reason for it. And he says, when a person moves his body, misorer hachom hativi al yidei his nose, u'amorer u'mekitz l'nefesh mitardema. It's an interesting idea, but I think what he means is that when you're physically moving, it can get you going a little bit. It can inspire deeper concentration when you're physically moving. It's very easy to fall asleep when you're just standing still, but when you're moving a little bit, it can get you more into it. So he says it's to this chom hativi, to reinvigorate this natural heat. So the Mishnah Berurah in Sadihei Sukkan Zayin says, yeah, that's the minhag that we should shake during davening. There's a tshuva in the Ramami Panu in Siman Kuf Yud Gimel says not to shake during davening, and Rabbi Yaakov Avinu says shake, but just don't do it violently. You know, not to shake too much. Mishnah Berurah quotes those who don't do it during Shemone Esrei, but really he says whatever's best for kavana. This is not like a very high value in terms of the importance of the things in Judaism. Shaking is not like some people. Some Gedolei Yisrael, Daven Shemoneh Esrei, standing perfectly still, and that's fine if that works for them. Okay, so that's all just in terms of preparation for davening. So we have 8 minutes left to discuss actual kavana during tefillah. So the most famous piece ever written on kavana was written by Reb Chaim. Famous Reb Chaim in the Rambam, in Hilchos Tefillah, where he points out the contradiction in the Rambam, that the Rambam in Perek Dalet, Halacha Aleph, and Halacha Tezvav, and Halacha Tezayin, the Rambam writes several times that tefillah below Kavana is worthless. It's not a tefillah at all. Yet, the Rambam in Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph says, I'll read you the Rambam. The Rambam in Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph says, the Rambam writes, yeah, here it is, Misha hispalel v'lo kiven es libo, yachsor v'yispal b'kavana. V'im kiven es libo b'brach rishona shuveno tzarech. That kavana is only critical for the first brach of Shemoneh Esrei. So, whereas in Perek Dalet he goes, he says there, kavana is one of the things that's ma'ak v'nes hatvila, and he makes no distinction between first brach and anywhere else. And in Halacha Tezvav in Perek Dalet, he says, Kavana Salevi describes what Kavana is, and he says, if you do tefillah without Kavana, you got to daven again, and no distinction whatsoever between the first bracha and the other brachos. In Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph, he distinguishes between the first bracha and all the other brachos. So what's Reb Chaim's famous words? So Reb Chaim says that there are two dinim in Kavana. There's tzvei dinim in Kavana. There's Kavana that appears in Milim, that you know what the words mean, and there's kavanah of omid b'fnei hamako, that if you daven with the recognition that you're omid b'fnei hamako, you just don't know what the words mean, you can't say eino tefillah, that it's not a tefillah. It is, you're omid b'fnei hamako, it is tefillah, but it's a tefillah without kavanah, and that's only ma'akev in the first bracha. But if a person davens, says the words of davening without even realizing that he's omid b'fnei hamako, well, that's in a tefillah. That's not even tefillah. The definition of tefillah is a recognition of standing in front of the Almighty. If you don't even have that, you're just practicing reading Hebrew. It's not, you know, with the words that happen to be in the Siddur. But it's not tefillah at all. And that type of kavanah, that basic fundamental level of kavanah, being omen v'nei makom, that's ma'akev for sure. That's the summary of Reb Chaim. So there is a lot of criticism in the later achronim of Reb Chaim's approach. The Chazon Ish on the Gilyon of the Chidush HaGrach says that this would make davening pretty much impossible. Meaning it would mean that you'd have to go through the entire Shemoneh Esrei without ever for a second forgetting that you're omid l'fnei hamakom. The Chazon Ish thinks it's more likely that the Rambam was distinguishing between tefillah as an ideal in very broad terms versus what's ma'akev tefillah. Meaning, in Perek Dalet, when he doesn't distinguish between the first bracha and anything else, he's talking about what kavana is supposed to be. And he describes what kavana is and says, without kavana, it's not really right, it's not really the proper kind of tefillah. It's not, but he doesn't mean that it's not a tefillah at all. No, when's it really, really ma'akev? It's really ma'akev in the first bracha. Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests that if you accept Reb Chaim, you know, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara about forgetting where you're up to in Kriya Shema, or where you're up to in Shemone Esrei. What do you go back to? Right? Where do you go back to? So he says, you know, he says, "Hayomid b'ksavtem sheparsha shniya." If you began the manirbu yumechem, so you could assume that you already were up to the parsha shniya, and you weren't only in the parsha rishon of Kriya Shema, because you assume mistamak if you herge lishono, you went into the manirbu because you were up to the second parsha of Kriya Shema. No, what's the problem here? You obviously were somewhere else. Your mind was in, I don't know, wherever. It was in Yankee Stadium. It was in the Bahamas. I don't know. Your mind wasn't there. So obviously, you didn't have kavanah. So the whole thing, according to Reb Chaim, the whole thing is ruined. You have to go back and repeat everything anyway. So what's this whole discussion, says Rosh Hashanah, meaning it's hard to accept Reb Chaim lahalacha. Yeah. Yeah, but I think the poskim assume the same applies to Shemone Esrei. They assume Sirchei Nakat, that if you forget where you are, but you find it, it's just that in Shemone Esrei, you normally won't forget because you'll always see which words are coming out of your mouth and know where you are. It's just by Kriya Shema, there are similar enough psukim in the first paragraph and the second paragraph that you might forget which one you're actually up to. Ravadi Yosef in Yabiya Omer Chel Gimel Ar Chaim Simen Ches also is not so into this Reb Chaim. He thinks it's against the Gemara, because the Gemara says in Brachas Laman and Beis, Rabbi Chir Barabbat Tzali V'Hadat Tzali, he would daven and then daven again. So Rabbi Zeira said to him, my time of in Mar Hachi, why did you do this? Ile Mishum Delo Kivein Itkar Mar Dereish Yarcha, Delo Kivein Mar Daite, that he didn't have Kavana. How did that happen? That you didn't have kavanah? You're not supposed to daven unless you're going to be able to have kavanah. It must be you forgot Yalaviyavo. But if Reb Chaim is correct, why did the Gemara have to say Dalitkar Dereish Yarcha? Maybe by kavanah itself, there's a chilik between the Perush HaMilos and the kavanah of Omid Lefnei Hashem. So maybe what the real answer of the Gemara should have been that what does it mean you shouldn't daven unless you're able to be mechavim libo, that you're omid lefnei Hashem, but it's still possible that you're going to have to repeat Shemone Esrei if you didn't have the second type of kavanah of pirush hamilim. Why did the Gemara just immediately reject that as an answer and say, oh, it must be that he forgot Yalav Yavo and that it wasn't a chisar in his kavanah? It must be that the Gemara couldn't have answered Reb Chaim's word because it doesn't exist. It's not true. That's what Ravadi says. Alvadi shein chiluk bazel. Yom tzorch omid. You always have to see if you're able to have any sort of kavana. There are a number of halachos that relate to kavana. Mishnah Berurah says that you need to know the pirush hamilim of modim also. They still have to discuss why dafka modim, meaning that it probably means that when you're beginning that section of Shemone Esrei, you need to begin each section with an enhanced sense of kavana. The Bir Alacha writes in Simon Kof Aleph that even in between words you shouldn't think of other things. You should keep the focus even in between the words. Tur in Simon Kof Aleph says that you at least, at the very least, even if you lose it somewhere in the middle, have kavana besof kol bracha ubracha at the end of each bracha. I find that it's a useful trick, I guess, to try to tell yourself, I'm not going to have kavanah the whole Shemone Esrei, but whenever I say Hashem's name, I'm going to think about Hashem. And if you do that, you'll find that at least besof kol bracha ubracha, you're reorienting yourself. You're bringing yourself back in. So that at least fits the Torah's minimal kavanah necessary. So at least try to, if you're going to say the Shem Hashem, that you're thinking about the Ribono Shel Olam. It's interesting, the Kazhe Glover in Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, Simon Chav Beis, thinks that tefillah, even without kavana, is still a mitzvah. He has this chiddush that just going through the process is still a mitzvah on some level, which is a chiddush because l'chora it's nothing without kavana. He says, "Kivan de gam belo kavan a shem mitzvah Allah, bevadei chiyuv gomer alav lasos al kol panim belo kavan." Meaning, even if you know you're not going to be able to have kavana, do it anyway, because it has a shem mitzvah Allah. Bechora, that's against the Gemara, right? The Gemara said, if you're able to mechad liba yispalel im lav al yispalel, you're asking that you're not going to be able to have kavana, you should not have it. Okay, so those are some of the inyanim relating to kavana and tefillah. How many more?